This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Romero beats Rockhold but leaves Western Australia without the gold. Some huge performances by up-and-coming UFC talent shows promise in some of the bigger weight classes. And we are joined by Donald Cerrone and Sage Northcutt, who will be featured on this weekend's UFC Fight Night card in Austin, Texas on Sunday. Remember, it's on Sunday, not on Saturday when you're tuning into TSN. Joe, you have a good weekend?
Yeah, it was good. It was two birthdays. It was my best friend Dave's birthday, so I got to eat Mexican food on Saturday, which was exciting.
Where'd you go?
It's called La Carnita.
Oh, I've been here before.
El Catrine.
Okay.
There's two
that
of them.
I haven't been.
El Catrine is in the Distillery District.
Yes.
In Toronto. So that's the one I had to. El Carnita, I think, is downtown.
Yeah. La Carnita. Yeah,
La Carnita is downtown. Yeah. But no, it was good. I like Mexican. Been there before. Nice little cool spot. And then it was my sister's birthday on February 11th.
So great.
Nice.
Cool. Back to back.
Yeah. So two birthdays. Lots of cheating on my keto dieting. But overall, it was pretty good.
Yeah. You're never going to reach ketosis now.
No. I got to fight back into
exactly.
it. I
got to
drink all that oil now. Drink the bacon grease.
How do you eat when you travel?
This will be the first time I'm doing it.
But yeah.
So we're going to try
but
it
like
out.
Normally, do you eat like garbage when you travel or do you eat well?
I never really eat garbage. Garbage to me is like a burger.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that garbage to most people? Like to me, that's bad.
That's unhealthy.
I try to stay away from pizzas.
Unhealthy.
Yeah. I try to stay away from pizzas and stuff. But this will be a new test. But I've been to so many dinners and restaurants now that it doesn't really bother
meat and stuff,
me.
Right, and protein.
I'm having a nice piece of steak with some good vegetables, a good Caesar salad. Like it's good fats mixed with vegetables. It's not hard. And you realize that you don't really need carbs, man. And the cool thing was I was just listening to the Joe Rogan when he had Matt Brown on. I don't know if you listened to it.
I did not know.
But he's kind of went with my philosophy on things. He fights using ketosis with modified carbohydrates for the concussions and brain injuries and TBIs. And he said the same thing I said. Like, it's great. It's been good for the concussions and the headaches. And so, I mean, I think more and more people are going to do it once the research comes out because he promoted it too. So I'm glad there's other people doing what I'm doing. I'm not just the crazy one.
Do you still get headaches? Do you like still have post-concussion symptoms of any sort?
Not too much. But I mean, still, after a hard training session, like I bet you all the guys who are competing in the UFC now or in Glory, most of them will get headaches after sparring and training. Mm-hmm. It just becomes a regular part of the day.
Yeah.
Which kind of
But I know in your
crappy.
Gym, you usually don't do any head contact, right?
Yeah. What we try to do, and this is the best thing I think more gyms need to do, you don't really need to go hard to the head. I think it's more important to use the head to set up hard body punches, you know, good leg kicks. So we go really hard to the body and the legs, but we try to stay off the head. I mean, sometimes you have to bite the bullet. If a guy has a big pro fight coming up, he's fighting a heavy-handed puncher, you need to work your defense with some heavy punches, but not every day like the old-school mentality.
Who's had the best leg kicks that you've ever gone against? Since you go,
we're
turning into interview mode.
No,
now,
I know,
but
you know what? I get this question a lot. And even with the UFC, I mean, I'll talk about it as I explain my thing. Jimmy Smith was calling the fights. It was his first time, but I hate when people talk about low kicks as just this setup weapon. Setup. Oh, it's going to do. He kept talking about it's the investment into the later rounds. It is, but I think the reason guys aren't, finishing with the leg is because they don't know how to do it or committing to it. Or a lot of these fights, and I mean, I can't remember exactly, but guys kept scoring low kicks and low kicks and low kicks, and they weren't, the commentators aren't scoring it. And then all of a sudden, there's a decision, and the guy who threw the low kicks won because people don't value them enough as scoring. And I mean, even the commentators need to get it. I mean, it bothers me when people say you can't finish with low kicks. Because that's my specialty.
And but we've also seen it in the UFC. We've seen guys finish with low
exactly.
kicks.
Yeah, exactly.
We've seen Barboza finish with low kicks.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it can be done, but just guys need to be stubborn and persistent on attacking that leg and put that damage in. But, yeah, I never really fought anyone who out-low kicked me. I won't.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think there is. I don't think there is anyone on this planet this modern day that would out-low kick me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because in the past, you had Ernesto Hoost, who Mr. Low Kick, Mr. Perfect, one of the best low kickers in the game. I mean, consistent, hard low kicker, all the old school guys low kick. The new school don't low kick anymore. Try to find guys who are consistent with finishing with low kicks. It's very difficult.
I remember...
guys use them but don't finish with them.
I remember Mike Chiesa's trainer and the people that trained with Chiesa, he would teach them not to check kicks. And that doesn't seem like a good strategy.
What was the return?
Just take kicks and like use them as a way of countering. Like if a guy's going to kick you, don't worry about checking it, but throw the punch as they're going to kick you.
Yeah, that's a good. It's a counter.
Yeah.
You can call it a
it's
combo
like a
breaker,
yeah.
a stopping. But the thing is, with a good low kick, my leg's longer than your hand. So if I know how to move my head off center line, if I know how to set it up properly, this is the thing about a low kick. If I throw it properly, you can't time me. So I'm going to throw it as you step in. Boom, you go to jab me. I take your leg right away. Or if you're exiting now, say you're moving backwards, I hit your leg then. So I hit you on transition. So a good low kick does not have to be, you can't block my low kick. Mm-hmm. I challenge you to block my low kick. You can't, because I throw it at a time where I know you can't block it. So that makes a good low kick.
One new school guy that values low kicks is Justin Gaethje. He loves throwing them. He said before the Alvarez fight, he goes, I'm going to take his leg home.
I love it. Yeah. I love it, man. Good low kicking, love it. Yeah. It's underrated, I'm telling you. Or it drives me nuts in the first two rounds. Guys hurt the guy's leg. It's so visible the guy's leg is hurt. It's swollen. It's black. It's bruised. The guy can't even step on it. They walk on it. Third round comes. All you need is two more leg kicks. What do they do?
Yeah, they start throwing head punches.
Yeah. The legs hurt. Finish it. All you need is three more shots, and it's done. Set it up properly. Learn. Use your boxing. Drives me nuts. There's my rant on low kicks. The other thing Jimmy Smith said that drove me nuts was the up jab. It was Ross Pearson throwing this up jab. It's called an up jab. He kept calling it this vertical jab up punch or something like that. I was like, huh? Mm-hmm. It's called up jab, Jimmy Smith. Up jab.
Well, send him a note.
I know. I said
I think Jimmy's the type of guy that would value feedback.
It's called an up jab. It was driving me nuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, he hasn't trained in striking, but jiu-jitsu is his main base.
What are you taking from these changes in commentators?
What I'm taking is that I love the two-man booth. Like, the three-man booth is good if you have the right... Like, Cormier likes to talk a lot. So having Cormier in a three-man booth, I feel like
Dominic
he's stepping
Cruz
on people's...
Dominic Cruz loves to talk.
Dominic Cruz likes to talk a lot. So having him in a three-man booth, they're tap dancing all over each other. When Brian Stann was doing it, I thought he was a good fit for a three-man booth.
Yeah.
Anik's a good fit for two or three-man booth. He's the best of the best in combat sports in terms of play-by-play right now. Him and Morrow. Although a lot of people think Morrow talks too much also, but
Morrow tends to dominate because he's so experienced and he's so exciting.
He's the voice of God.
Yeah. I mean, so he tends to dominate. Like, even when I worked with him so many shows, it's really hard to like match him because he's so like, and I think that's with comedy. You have to match the level of your play-by-play guy.
I actually thought Anik and Smith sounded great together. Yeah. I think they've done commentary together in the past when they were both at ESPN. I forget what it was for. I think it was for early Bellator. Like, Bellator at first was on ESPN, like very early days of Bellator. The first season, I think. I think that was, I can't remember if that was Smith and Anik or Smith and Wheelock. Maybe I'm thinking something different. But they had very good chemistry right from the jump.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan of Jimmy Smith's. But I did start realizing, like, when I talked to Robin Black thinks that a lot of the commentary nowadays in MMA insults the intelligence of the viewer. They think that they're
that
not,
was my point about Jimmy Smith.
And Jimmy Smith is he's good at simplifying things, which
a
is
little
good.
Too much.
But yeah, sometimes it's a little bit too much.
Good point. Because I was going to ask you, that was going to be my criticism of it. I thought it was too educational. I mean, you have to remember too.
Too educational, you mean?
Too basic.
Too basic, okay.
Yeah, like how many times do you have to tell people that the low kicks are this investment into the later? You've said it like six times in the fight, you know? But again, I'm not the perfect commentator. I'm learning, so I understand the stress. And he's new to the audience. So just because he's saying it, I mean, it's the first time he's actually saying it. So as he's on the air and the mic more, he won't repeat it because he feels like he has a connection with the audience already.
Yeah.
So I think that repetitiveness and the way of constantly educating and, I mean, and the thing is, you're educating. What gets me too is like I okay with like Dominic Cruz or DC giving their input and telling a fighter what he should do better because they're world champions.
Yeah, of course.
When I hear a guy win and then I hear someone like Jimmy Smith say, well, you know, he was good, but I feel like he should have done that. I'm kind of like, maybe lower those kind of statements unless you have.
Having active fighters do commentary is uncomfortable for me as is. Like, you've got Cormier calling like an Ovin St. Preux fight, and then afterwards St. Preux's like, I want the champion. It's like, well, the champion's calling the fight right now. It just, to me, I find that odd.
Did you hear my situation with that?
No.
Me and Nicky Holtzkin. So I was in Copenhagen. Nicky and I had a huge rivalry going in because, you know, we were hyping up this biggest fight in kickboxing history. What happened was I became the commentator at Glory 27. And at Glory 29, I was doing in-ring interviews. Nikki just won a title, so I went in to interview Nikki. And I already told the producers and everyone, like, I don't want to do this interview. Mm-hmm. Like, the tension, the problems are still there.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it. So what happens is I went into the interview.
Is this after you retired?
Yeah. This is when I'm already in the commentary booth. It's been like my third show in of full-time commentary. So I go in the ring. I told the producer, I don't want to do it. Can you get someone else to? Let's not do it. It's awkward. I have never talked to the guy. And the last time we saw you, we want to kill each other.
Yeah.
So I went in and they're like, Joe, you'll be fine. Just do it. Ask him some generic questions. I go into the ring. I'm like, hey, Nikki, good performance or something. I was like, whatever. The first question was generic. I'm like, who do you want to fight next? Just a generic question. Yeah. What does he do? Turns me, I want to fight you. And in there, we kind of like, I was thrown off. He called me out in the middle of the ring as a commentator. Like, I wasn't expecting it.
The problem is, you have to almost put your fighter hat on in that moment.
Yeah, I was like, at one point, I was like, bro, I would love to. I said something along the lines of, like, I would love it. The fans would love it. But, you know, like, answer the question kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of played it cool, but I was angry after, man. I'm like, I should have said this. I should have said that. I should have took my suit jacket off.
Yeah.
Like, I got worked up. Like, I didn't expect it. Mm-hmm. Picture that. Like, I did not expect it.
You didn't think you'd say that?
No, I didn't expect it. Mm-hmm. I did not expect it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a little thrown off. But it was awkward. It was weird. Like, my face went red. This was my second time ever doing in-ring interviews, so I'm nervous to begin with. It was brutal. Yeah. I should find it and try to send it to you.
Well, it's hard. Like, because it's hard, because when you're doing commentary, that's a different job.
It is,
like,
totally. You have to take your fighter's hat off.
And that's why when you have, like, Cruz is always calling out Team Alpha Male on the broadcast because of his rivalry with them. It's like, dude, you're the broadcaster right now. Yeah. Like, you got to, I feel like he's not calling it straight if he's commenting on, Team Alpha Male, I beat them a bunch of times. It's like, dude, we need you to call this down the middle.
Yeah, see, what Dominic Cruz does in his commentary, I did in the past, and I was told not to do it. Dominic Cruz has a... more of when he commentates, he looks at it more as like he's cornering the guy. And I tended to, I still do that a lot because you're looking at what he can do better. So it comes off negative sometimes. So yeah. Dominic Cruz, like, I think he should do this more. He's got to do this, this, and this more. So do I, because I'm looking, I'm like, yeah, Dom, you're right, man. He's got to do these things. But for someone who's not as invested, intellectually in kickboxing or MMA, they don't know, and it comes off negative that he's doing all these wrong things rather than he's doing something. So I had to switch a little bit to talk about more of the good things they are doing before I mention that little wrong thing. And I think Dominic Cruz can, benefit by that a little bit.
We could talk to Robin about this, I'm sure, for days.
He loves
this discussion. And when I watch him do TKO, he approaches it very, like, dramatically differently than other broadcasters do. It almost seems like he's really, you can tell that he's really soaking it in and really analyzing it on the fly from a very intelligent perspective.
Yeah, he just doesn't say something. If he says something, he means it, and it's well thought out. It makes sense. Yeah, he's well thought out in his commentary.
Yeah, and he has kind of this idea that we don't really have, unless you're a fighter, you don't really have the right to criticize somebody
if you
haven't done what they do. But, I mean, it's not that you can't criticize them, but there's a different approach.
There's
that
a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think, a lot of the best coaches weren't fighters themselves,
mm-hmm.
But you learn. But like you said, there's a way to do it. I mean, you can't just come out and just bash someone like that. Like, that's why I'm saying that little bit of positivity comes along. The hardest thing for me, think about me now, when my guy Rob fights, I have to commentate my own fighter.
Yeah. And you have to call it down the middle.
That is the hardest. Yeah. And I tried to call it down the middle, but poor Rob ends up getting negative commentary because I can't.
Him?
No, I was in the booth.
Yeah. So are you allowed to corner him?
No, they didn't let me.
No.
Because they wanted me to stay, like, in the commentator
role. Is that problematic for him?
Well, it would be better for both of us to be in there. My confidence, I trained him the most. I put the game plan together. I strategized everything. He does have his boxing coach who's really high level, so I'm okay with it. And he has my business partner who was my corner in all of my fights, so he's safe. But it's my brain. I want to control the joystick a lot, so it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. But
And if he loses,
he comes out super negative, though.
That too,
the poor guy gets super negative commentary because for me, I try to protect my image and him. So I'm not, hey, Rob's the greatest, Rob's the best, Rob's this. So I end up being a little bit more negative towards him.
Mm-hmm.
But I warn him. I'm like, hey, it's going to be negative, but we win, we do it, we dominate.
But you're also his instructor, right? So the negative thing that you would say on air, you'd probably say to him in person.
Yeah, I'd be like, Rob, why aren't you doing this?
Yeah,
why aren't you this? So that's what I'm saying. more of like what I would want him to do, and it comes out negative.
That's too bad they won't let you corner him. That they can't have somebody.
I thought it'd be great TV. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Part where I'm like, hey guys, take off my jacket, and I meet my guy in the corner, and I want it to be mic'd up. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. Have me, my emotions, me talking to him. I think it would make really great TV, but it was voted that I stay in the commentary booth.
All right. Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
So let's get to UFC 221.
Let's go.
We had a long conversation there. It's good.
That's it.
This is what podcasts are. They're conversational.
Let it go.
Yeah. In the words of the film Frozen, which I'm sure you don't know about, due to not having two small children.
I worked at a special ed high school.
Oh, that's true.
So a lot of the special ed kids, intellectually might be at grade 2-3 levels, and the autistic kids loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched Frozen a million times.
Oh, okay. So
I had to sing.
You might be up to date, up to the amount that I've watched.
Let It Snow song, I think I've heard it too many times.
So Yoel Romero, Luke Rockhold, where do we start? I mean, let's start with the weigh-in situation, because we had Yoel come in at 183.3 pounds. He has 2 hours to cut the weight, comes back at 187.7 pounds. But one thing that a lot of people didn't realize was that, we went over this on the show when I interviewed Jeremy Kennedy, was that the weigh-in situation in Western Australia was strange. The commission ruled that nobody could weigh in more than 24 hours before the fight, which is already silly to me.
Yeah.
But then, to exacerbate that, they wanted to hold public weigh-ins at 11 a.m. on Saturday morning, I guess it would be. Yeah, like Saturday morning in Australia. So 11 a.m. is public weigh-ins. And if they were going to do the official weigh-ins at 9 a.m., they didn't want the fighters to have to weigh in, leave, come back. So they just decided to do everything at 11 a.m. So we're talking about, I don't know, about 24 hours before the main event the next night. People are weighing in. So a lot of people weighing in 20 hours before their fight. And I mean, the crazy thing is only one person aside from Romero missed weight. It was Formiga missed by 0.16 pounds, cut the weight easily within like a couple minutes, came back and was fine.
Yeah.
But the venue was 15 minutes from the hotel where the sauna is, where the workout room is. Like, there's no facilities there. So Yoel had to get in a car, drive 15 minutes, go and do all that stuff.
So there's half
and come back.
Half hour
I learned
already.
That Bisping talked about that during the official weigh-in show. Which was whoever gave him that information, it was a very key nugget of information, because Yoel had to go back and forth from the venue to
takes land. Time,
and he was 3.3 pounds over. Like, you're not going to lose 3.3 pounds in an hour and a half. It's just not possible.
You know what? And it's crazy, because sometimes you do. Sometimes you'll go and you're like, oh man, I got 3 pounds, and they come off in 20 minutes. The next time you have 1 pound to do and it takes 3 hours or it won't even come off. So, I mean, it just depends the day, man.
Well, so the criticism that I heard was, why even bother doing weigh-ins if he's going to get the next title shot anyways? Well, here's why. Because as a result of Romero missing weight, he loses 30% of his show, which let's say he was making 150.
Such a little difference, too.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, 3 pounds. It doesn't seem
pounds.
Crazy
yeah.
to lose what he did.
Yeah, so because he was 3 pounds over, 2.7 pounds over, 150,000, so he's lost 45,000 of that. Win bonus, 150,000, 45,000 of that. Reebok money, because if you're challenging for a championship, you get 30,000, but he wasn't, so 10,000 there. And then in the next fight, when he's competing for the championship against Whitaker, he's not considered an interim champ. So all of those championship bonuses and landmarks are all gone.
I mean,
so you're talking about potentially $200,000 because
easily.
Of those 3 pounds.
And I guarantee you somewhere in his contract, he has something. If you win the champion, there's an extra $50,000 or something. I mean, I'm telling you, he's pissed.
He lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
So people are saying, oh, why bother? Why bother even having the interim title if he's going to get the shot anyways? That's why.
Yeah.
The fighters make more with interim titles. That's why I'm pro-interim title. That's why when UFC 222 fell out with Holloway, I said, make an interim bantamweight championship, make an interim featherweight championship, just create interim belts, because all it is a promise ring, and these guys get paid more money.
Yeah.
So
a lot
everybody's
of people
going,
hate
oh,
them.
It oversaturates the division. Well, now you've got a number one contender. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's growing on me. The interim belt's growing on me, because it's not fair for the guys who are waiting for these guys. And I mean, it's MMA, it's combat sports. Guys are going to be hurt. They're injured. They're surgery. So they're growing on me.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. They're growing on me.
Well, like, let's say Romero. Well, I mean, it's a bad example because he didn't get the interim title. But let's say this wasn't for the interim title. Romero wins, and then a couple weeks later, Jacare fights Gastelum. It's not a booked fight. That's something I pulled out of a hat.
Yeah.
And Jacare taps out Gastelum in 20 seconds. Now it's like, wow, this guy's a killer. They forget what Romero did a month ago. This is the guy that's going to go for the belt.
Easily, yeah.
It can happen.
Yeah.
But now if you have an interim championship, you're the guy.
You're the guy. Yeah, I don't mind it.
So?
I mean,
that's why I like
he lost
it.
A lot. So Romero lost
he lost a lot. He lost the guarantee of a title shot, although I think that his performance certainly warrants it.
Yeah.
Six of his nine UFC wins all in the third round, which is absurd. The odds on him winning in round three were like almost 12 to 1.
Yeah, he was an underdog.
that should have been a bet everybody made.
Yeah.
It was an underdog. Was a big underdog on fight day because he missed the weight.
On my personal bets, I picked Luke Rockhold.
Yeah.
So I lost my bet. I had a good parlay, too.
I was starting to feel Romero more as it started to get closer, too. I was thinking, and I mentioned this on last week's show, I said, Rockhold has more ways to win, but Romero has a better way to win.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt with Ngannou and Stipe also. I said, Stipe's got way more ways to win, but Ngannou has a better way to win. All it takes is one.
Yeah.
And with Romero, he has that power. And, I mean, a lot of people said, oh, if Romero starts grappling with Rockhold, he's going to be, it's going to be a problem. It's like, Romero barely grapples with anybody. He's a silver medalist in the 2000 Olympics in freestyle wrestling, and he barely uses his wrestling. The only reason he uses the wrestling is that so that people are... He can threaten with the wrestling. He can do head movement,
yeah.
Threaten with the wrestling, and then use it to make his striking better. And the guy's built like a brick house.
That's a perfect strategy because everybody's scared of him.
Yeah.
So regardless, they don't want him to touch it. So for him, he's developed to use his striking. And even the way he was able to close distance with his punches, it's like he knows what he's doing.
And in that second round, Rockhold was getting blasted. Rockhold's striking defense needs work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like to bash teams and coaches and stuff, but he's part of a team at Hard Knocks 365s who value a lot of pressure fighting, and they're pressure fighters. And a lot of that Dutch style is, forward, attack. And then, they don't focus on defense a lot.
Or matchups. Like, you can't utilize that pressure approach.
On everyone.
Because if you're pressuring somebody who has better striking, like
that's
more powerful
that's
striking
part of the
you.
Criticism on kickboxing for MMA. So that's why even when people talk about me, like, oh, you're kickboxing, kickboxing Muay Thai can't work in MMA. It can.
Look at Jose Aldo.
You just need the right types of tools, distance control, range, feeling, setups, timings. It could work. You just need the right person to do it.
Because when you look at Jose Aldo, he's basically made a career out of just strictly being a Muay Thai fighter that knows how to stop takedowns.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, that's all it is. Is it's Muay Thai striking. He rarely grapples with anybody. I think he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. Never uses it.
And he trained with a lot of heavy, hard K-1 kickboxers too.
Yeah.
He had Andy Sauer for many years.
Yeah,
he had many years. He had Andy Sauer as his corner, as his training camp. So he's really valued his striking, and it's very positive.
Yeah. So I was very impressed with Romero. Rockhold looks like he's going to move up to 205 next.
Yeah, that's the rumor I've heard.
Yeah, and he said, these weight cuts are a little too much. Did you see the interview with him on right after the weigh-ins?
I didn't really see the interview, but I saw him freak out. I think he was almost crying on the mic too. He was so emotional.
Yeah,
like,
well, he was
being a professional.
Yeah, and he was just on another planet. He was out of sorts, and people were like, "Oh, you shouldn't interview people after weigh-ins." And I'm thinking, like, well.
The story, yeah.
But the weigh-in, well, A, it's the story you have to, and B, for years after weigh-ins that were the official weigh-ins, people were interviewing, like Ronda. Remember she went after Holly Holm? She was barely there. She's cut so much weight, it was a bad weight cut. If someone has a bad weight cut, they're like on another planet when you're talking to them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It sucks. Weight cuts are crappy, but it tells the story, right? You got to tell the story, and I think people love that side of fighting when you see that story of them being super dehydrated. And the first thing I tell people that's the coolest thing about fighting is the fact that we can change and manipulate our bodies so much.
So you're not for, like, the 1F. Do you know how 1FC does their weigh-ins?
I heard how they do it.
They do same day, and they test your hydration levels, and
they'll cut
a fight if somebody's too dehydrated and they're, like, a certain percentage off weight or something along those lines, which I think is a good solution. But at the same time, you don't want, like, the problem with the UFC doing that is, like, you're going to lose fights on fight day more often than not, probably.
Yeah. I'm a big believer, and I know they're trying so many different ways for this weight cut. Even if you add weight divisions, fighters are still going to fight to make that weight, no matter what it is. Even if you add a 165 division,
And then you'll have guys from 170 dropping down an extra 5 pounds.
Yeah. Because now guys are like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to lose that little bit more to get. People are still going to cut weight.
Yeah.
I mean, the only ones who are not going to do it are the ones who are confident in their skills.
And really, the 1FC
Most
system.
Most people are going to do it.
Yeah, like the 1FC system is really the only one that I've seen. I guess it's called One Championship, so I don't want to mess up the name of their company. One Championship, like they, the way that they have it, basically is foolproof so that people don't cut weight.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, that is a very good system. But at the same time, you're at risk if somebody is trying to cut, you know. Yeah. Like,
I think the issue with them, too, why it could work a little bit better, they're in Asia. And I don't think and they pull from a lot of Muay Thai fighters. They don't really cut weight. I don't think, weight cutting is a thing as much as it is over here. I think weight cutting became a big thing in North America because of wrestling. And guys cut weight. In Europe, those guys don't know how to cut weight. Like, in Europe and Asia, they don't cut weight. Like, I mean, they cut a kilo, a few pounds here and there, but they don't cut like a traditional North American or U.S. fighter who's cutting, you know, 30, 40 pounds in their camp. They're cutting anywhere from 10 to 15 pounds the day before their fight. You go to Holland, like, I mean, I'll give you a kickboxing example. When Myrtle Grunhart fought Cedric Doumbé for the world title, Doumbé didn't know how to cut weight. The world welterweight champion did not know how to cut weight. He was struggling. He didn't eat for like 3 days. He didn't know what to do. He was rushing. They don't know how to cut weight. This is a guy with 80 professional fights.
Boxing's the same way. They don't cut a lot of weight in boxing.
Because you have boxing, I wouldn't recommend cutting because you have 10 rounds of taking shots. That's a big.
When you can't rehydrate well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't recommend it for boxing, but I think there's so much more weight cutting in North America. I could be wrong, but from my experience, that is what
I've seen. Wrestlers cut a lot of weight. Like amateur wrestlers, I believe, cut a lot of weight because they have to stay on weight all the time.
Yeah. And they're doing it from a young age, too. That's the scary part.
The one thing USADA does that I really disagree with is the ban, the IV ban. I think, like, if this is what you do, you do your weigh-ins, right after the weigh-in, urine test, like urine submission, blood submission, and then have USADA
administer
the IVs.
I agree with that.
And just have licensed people administer the IVs because you've now tested them. You know there's nothing in their system because the reason IVs are banned are not combat sports related, but like cycling and other sports, USADA found that people were using solutions to get to basically cheat drug tests by putting like IVs.
Diluting
the samples or diluting the substances.
But
using
if you're
IVs.
Tested already.
But if you're tested already and they're implementing the IVs and they're putting through the IVs.
It's going to only help brain injuries.
Yeah.
It's going to only help recovery. It's going to help. I agree
100%.
With it. I think the big problem is.
And there's not that much of an extra cost because you've got people, officials that are there on site anyways.
I've been around fighting for so many years. The issue with it, Aaron, is people not from all levels, their coaches do it, their teammates do it. You know,
they're performance enhancing drugs.
No, I'm talking about injecting the IV.
Oh, okay.
When I have, you know, your training buddy who's not certified or a nurse to do it is injecting you. Yeah, things can start going wrong, right? Yeah. That's the big issue, and I've seen it. If we have nurses doing it, that scares me. Everyone's like, oh, why don't you do it? He's like, I'll do it for you. No. I don't know what you can do. You're not injecting an IV into my arm. Yeah. I don't trust you. I've been offered so many times. I've done it so many times. That's what happens. Yeah, sure, inject me. You have no idea what you're doing. Let's start poking around, right? That's where I think it becomes dangerous, sterilizing the IVs. It's literally, Aaron, training partners doing it. I think that's what's the scary part for me.
But I'm not saying to unban IVs. I'm saying
it's going to only
allow
help the
IVs
guys.
Only in that scenario. It needs to be 100%. A licensed person administering the IV.
And they've been tested. It's all good, 100%.
Yeah. So. What's the problem with that? That's the thing that I don't understand. But next time I see Forrest Griffin, I'm going to ask him about
that. Okay, I have a reason why I wouldn't. It would be more just because guys are encouraged to cut more weight at that point. If like, oh, if I got an IV, I can lose an extra 5 pounds. Maybe it's encouraging guys to want to do it.
Well, then add regulations to that. You know what I mean?
That's what they're trying, right?
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah.
The problem is there's no solution right now that makes a whole lot of sense.
My understanding was, because I obviously looked into it when I was competing, I heard within 10 pounds, you don't really need the IV. You can do it naturally through, you know, drinking your water and through foods. So within 10 pounds, you don't really need it. It's if you're getting excessive, that's when you need the extreme IV. So I think if you're cutting within, you know, 10 to 12 pounds, 24 hours, which what is healthy and you should be doing if you're cutting weight, you don't need it.
All right, well, let's look at some of the other fights at 221. Curtis Blaydes showing great fight IQ. He was tagged in that first round by Mark Hunt, and he thought to himself, you know, this isn't my game.
I'm not playing this game.
So He said, I think, in his post-fight interview, in the post-fight conference, like, I went out for, like, 2 seconds. Like, he was out on his feet for about 2 seconds. He said he heard his coach say, take down, take down. And then just that was his game plan from there on out. Yeah. And it worked well for him. And to see a 26-year-old
came in.
Yeah, see a 26-year-old at heavyweight get 30-26s over Mark Hunt. That's
you
what
called
you
him out. I'm giving it to you, Aaron. You called him out. You said he was a next contender, and I was, I don't know. I was unsure about it. But you're right.
Yeah, I've been saying it for a while. I
Big
said he
boy,
should have been next
strong,
in line for the title
intelligent.
Shot before, before the DC and Stipe fight was made. I said he should have been next in line for heavyweight if he won this fight. And not only did he win this fight, he won the fight in pretty spectacular fashion.
Who do you want him next? Who do you want him with next?
Curtis Blaydes?
Yeah.
Ngannou.
Yeah.
Curtis
Rematch.
Blaydes said, here's who he called out after
He'll
the fight.
Ngannou.
He calls out Cain Velasquez, Alistair Overeem, and Francis Ngannou. Like, this is my type of guy. He's not ducking anybody.
I think he beats Ngannou.
Yeah, well,
I think
now
he
that
beats
we've
Ngannou
seen
now.
The blueprint.
Yeah.
Blaydes said after the fight, like, Ngannou hit him harder than Hunt.
And
Hunt did. He didn't, like, Ngannou didn't finish him. It was a doctor stoppage. Like, he didn't knock him out, right? So he's taken punches from Ngannou and survived them. So, you know, Blaydes has a chin on him. Hunt was unable to stop him, even though he tagged him in that first round. And I think if Blaydes can implement wrestling, if he could beat Francis Ngannou, who was basically a world beater up until losing to Stipe, now suddenly you've got a guy. It's like, okay, this is the guy.
Yeah, no, I like it. Young, talented, big, strong. His wrestling is unbelievable. Yeah, I'm on the Curtis Blaydes train with you.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy that I'm going to be touting very highly in terms of the heavyweight pecking order, because really I don't see anybody else ahead of him.
Yeah,
who can you make a case for that Stipe hasn't already beat? Maybe Verdum. Oh, no, but he's beaten Verdum. But maybe Verdum could be next in line. But Verdum's fighting Volkov. That could be a title eliminator, but, you know.
Yeah, there's not many.
The heavyweight division's on hold pretty much until July. So there's not much going on. Blaydes is probably going to have to fight once more. So if Blaydes fights Ngannou, beats him, now suddenly you know, he's the guy.
Yeah, I agree.
So we'll have to see. Tai Tuivasa looked fantastic. I'm a former rugby player. And he just made easy work of Surreal Asker. That was Tuivasa is another guy to watch in the heavyweight division, which is great to see because the heavyweight division for a while was very stagnant. Lots of older guys. The top 10 was dominated by guys that were 30 plus, many of whom were 35 plus. And now the good thing about this card, even though a lot of people said, people aren't really going to buy it, it established a lot of really good up and comers. Tuivasa, Blaydes. Tyson Pedro with a nice comeback win. When I say comeback, I mean coming back off a loss to Ilir Latifi in Edmonton. Jake Matthews at welterweight looks like a player. Israel Adesanya, of course, looked fantastic at middleweight. We'll get to him. Alexander Volkanovski beat Jeremy Kennedy. I know Volkanovski's 29, but he's still undefeated and looking very good. So, seeing performances like that is, nothing but promising for the UFC brass.
Yeah, I like what they're doing, and I found that on this card a lot. They're big guys that they're building. They're building them right. They're not overthrowing them. They gave them fights like with the Tuivasa fight. We knew he was going to win. We knew he was going to knock him out, but it's just giving him that experience in the cage and in front of people. And I think
and having him fight guys that have, like, Surreal Asker has 2 wins in the UFC.
Yeah.
So it's a guy that we know has the ability to beat people.
Yeah, that's a little bit more durable than a guy. But, we knew Tuivasa was going to win. There was no surprise to that. But I like how they're building him. Hopefully they continue to build him. And then, take your time with these guys. I don't like when these guys are rushing. I keep saying it. You got to start taking your time to build superstars. Don't expect these guys. There's only few people in this world. And, there's a few John Jones. There's a few people who can, Brock Lesnar's, Joe Valtellini's, who can go in there and just literally take the world with no fights. But there's very few people who can do it. And I learned that as a coach now.
It's harder in kickboxing, so good on you.
Yeah, thank you.
These guys have like 100 fights going into Glory.
Oh, yeah, it is, literally. I fought.
That was the thing that struck me when I started watching Glory.
My Glory debut, I fought a guy who had. It was my 7th fight. He had, I think, somewhere around 70. He had like 56 of his 70 wins by knockout.
Yeah,
I was terrified.
And who was the guy that they brought in that was supposed to be? He was Eastern European guy in Glory with a really strong record that everybody thought was going to be unbeatable, and he lost his first fight, if I recall. I don't remember who, first or second fight.
I'm trying to
remember who it was. Go back and not Middle Eastern, like Eastern Russia, Eastern European.
Oh, bigger guy?
No, I think he was like a 170-ish. I might be wrong. I don't know. Yeah. I'll have to go back and look and tell you. But I was surprised you see his records like 96-3. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, there's some crazy.
Yeah. You don't see that, but too much of that in MMA.
No, not yet.
But
except your Jeremy Horn. Didn't Jeremy Horn probably had the longest and biggest record ever?
Travis Viouf, I think, is about to fight his 100th fight.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But with, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask the voice of glory about Israel Adesanya, former Glory fighter, making his UFC debut as an undefeated fighter. I mean, the takedown defense looked good, but you told me before the show there was something you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, no, I thought he did incredible. I thought his ability, I knew he was a stance switcher. I knew he was going to stay long distance. I knew he was going to try to pick on the outside. And I found the key was his boxing. He found his jab really early. And then he switched stance to southpaw, and he found a beautiful, you know, left straight down the middle. He was finding success with the boxing, then his kickboxing natural abilities came out, where he'd throw a kick in close range, boom, and then all of a sudden he's having to do takedown defenses. Where I think if he learns to stick to the hands and kind of control his kicking a little bit, he would have avoided some of the clinching exchanges, and I think he could have finished him in the first round. My personal bet, I put Adesanya for first round KO.
Yeah.
He took it in the second, but I think if he didn't make those little, you know, kicking, he's got... He kicked when he probably shouldn't have. You know, that was it's very small error, but I mean, that caused a lot more clinching than had to have happened. So I think if he would have stuck to his range and his punches, easily first round. But I just love to see good striking, man. Mm-hmm. And the way and how intelligent he was, the way he mixed his knees up the middle, and just the way he hit the body. It's refreshing to see good striking in MMA.
And he was good on the ground, too. Like, he did that roll.
Yeah,
try to get
quick,
out of a
scramble. Explosive. He showed promise.
Yeah.
He showed promise.
Yeah.
It scared me in that first round. I was like, here we go. Another kickboxer is just going to get put up against the cage.
But how many attempts were there? I think it was like 2 for 11 or something.
Yeah, 2 for 11. But it was just, it's exhausting. And it wasn't that, okay, great. The first round you defended the takedown, but could he do that in the second round? Could he do it in the third round? It's different fatigue. Like, now that I'm not kickboxing, I do jiu-jitsu once or twice a week. Man, I can't even roll 5 minutes. I'm done. I'm gassed out. Like, and I mean, calf cramping. My back is killing me. Like, I just, my neck is sore. It's totally different. So I'm good on Adesanya. Like, we saw Gokhan Saki do it, and he was completely gassed.
Yeah.
And he fought another striker.
Yeah.
And he fought another striker. So Adesanya just showed good level. He is 11-0. But man, just
I'd
good.
I'd love
just
to see
impressive.
Him up against a striker next. Just, like, create a fun fight. I mean, that was a fun fight, but, like, Wilkinson just kept going for takedowns.
Yeah,
and it was frustrating because you want to watch
dangerous.
Him.
Yeah. But, yeah, I would love to see another strike. For me, he seems like, when I look at, like, Yoel Romero, Rockhold, he just seems like a weight class below.
He weighed in at 183. I don't know if that's kickboxing way, you know, like you said earlier.
I think he was surprised. I think it just, sometimes it happens. Sometimes you're like, oh, my God, you step on the scale, you make your weight. An hour later, you're down 2-3 pounds.
Was he a middleweight in Glory as well?
Yeah.
So that was 185.
He fought my guy, Rob Thomas. He fought Rob in kickboxing. He fought for the world title. I think he didn't really get signed with Glory. He wasn't really happy with the decision for his world title.
Yeah.
He fought Jason Wilnes, who my guy, Rob, is fighting in L.A. But, he just wasn't happy, and he was just very, wasn't content. He thought he won. It was a close fight regardless, but I think MMA is where he is. He's got the personality. He can talk on the mic, and I think that's the thing. He made noise. The big headlines are Yoel Romero and Adesanya now, you know. Mm-hmm. He's really built the name for himself
What's the date of that fight, the Glory fight?
Which one? The next one?
The one in L.A.
The one in L.A., March 30th.
March 30th, okay.
Yeah. So we have next week, the 16th, and then March 3rd, and then March 30th.
Where's the one on the 3rd? The same that is the UFC event.
Amsterdam,
okay.
That's our Badr Hari return.
A different time, probably.
Yeah, it'll be probably a six-hour.
I saw the Badr Hari press conference last week. That was interesting.
Yeah, it was okay. They did the beginning in English, and then they went into the Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what else do we got here? I think we've pretty much covered this card. I thought Juicy A Formiga looked really good against Ben Wynn. Ben Wynn's was knocked out 6 times prior to that fight at flyweight, which is very strange.
Who did they give Fight of the Night to?
Fight of the Night went to Jake Matthews and Li Jinglang, which was a great fight.
Yeah, Matthews was a pretty big underdog, I believe.
Yeah,
too.
He was like plus 170 or something. And they gave bonuses to Adesanya and Formiga. And again, the Yoel Romero, not eligible for one. Another $50,000 down the
tubes. Yeah, he would have had it.
He would have had it.
Yeah, that, for sure, the knockout of the night.
Yeah. So that's why do they have weigh-ins? Well, that's why. Because you need to make weight. Otherwise, you're going to get penalized. And when you're fighting for a championship, it's an extra. I mean, if people don't know, a lot of people don't know this, but if you're the champion and you miss weight, you're stripped on the spot.
Yeah. Oh,
Like if Daniel Cormier in Buffalo last year, he weighed in at like 206 point something and then magically shed that extra pound with the help of the magic towel.
The magic towel.
The towel seven, as they call it. He was able to, you know, they would have stripped him on the spot. He would have lost the title.
Did they stop allowing people to touch the towel?
Yeah. The commission just monitors it more.
A little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I had my friends
when I was
try
a kid.
It.
We used to have a towel rack in front of my scale as a kid, and if I wanted to gain weight, I'd push down hold it up if I want to lose weight.
There you go. You started it then.
Yeah. Apparently it's an old wrestling trick.
Yeah.
So that's
I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. You know what?
I mean, now, like, hey, like if my guys are fighting and I see the towel, yeah, we're gonna do it.
Try to do what you can.
Let's
right?
do it.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, but I had friends who actually tested it after, and they said, yeah, it works. So.
Oh, of course it works. Yeah, if you pull up on anything while you're making weight, it'll take point something pounds off of you.
Just enough to make weight.
Just enough. Yeah.
Come on, Yoel, use the towel trick, buddy. You would have been $250,000 richer.
I'd be surprised if Cormier fights at light heavyweight ever again. I know he says, well, I'm hanging on to the belt because, you know, I would drop it if I didn't think I was going to go back. But he, you know, if he loses to Stipe, he's still the champion, right?
Yeah.
If he beats Stipe, then I can see why he would then forfeit that belt and stay at heavyweight.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I don't know if he has much left.
He says he wants to fight until he's 40, and that's a year from now.
Okay.
So, a year from next month.
But yeah,
so
you have to think about
to
it, though.
What he wants to do.
Well, he goes in, he fights the big fight. I'm sure you're taking some damage where you're going to need to take.
Yeah, against Stipe, you're probably going to take some.
You're
damage.
Taking some damage Stipe where you're
not
taking.
Not going to be an easy guy to take down.
Yeah, you take a jab from Stipe, you're probably eyes busted up. You're probably breaking your orbital from a jab or a right hand from him. So I think he's going to have to take some time. So it's probably this fight and then one more, and then that's his retirement.
Yeah, that probably, maybe two more if he's lucky. Yeah. I don't know. All right, so. UFC Fight Night in Austin on Sunday. It's going to air on TSN2, and it's main evented by Donald Cowboy Cerrone versus Yancy Medeiros. That should be one heck of a fight, given Yancy Medeiros' last fight, and then what Donald Cerrone's done. Just two guys that are going to stand and trade with each other. And we're lucky enough to be joined now by Cowboy Cerrone. He's always a fun interview, and we appreciate him. Here he is on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
I'm joined now by Donald Cowboy Cerrone. He'll be in the main event at UFC Fight Night in Austin against Yancy Medeiros this weekend. So, Donald, 2 months ago, you were on The Fighter and the Kid. You said you were trying to move back to lightweight. What made you change your mind?
I haven't changed my mind, but the UFC just called me and said they wanted me to take a fight with Matt Brown. And they're like, you fight anyone, any weight, so how about this? I said, okay, fine.
So lightweight, you think, is still potentially on the horizon after this fight?
Yeah, 100. I'm 174 pounds right now. Eating, we had Mexican food for dinner last night. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I just when I'm at 55 or I'm at 70, like that's kind of my weight is 175, 176, just what I weigh, man. It's hard to get above that, and so I'm really small for 70. But hey, man, it makes life a lot easier. I don't have to worry about any kind of diet or any kind of you know, suffering during fight week, so that's nice. Where 55 is terrible for me. Making those last, if there's a 165 weight class, that'd be it. But, you know, 155 is tough to make.
You mentioned that Darren Till was a lot bigger than you in that last fight. Does it make it a little bit easier knowing Yancy Medeiros was also a lightweight at one point in time?
Oh, I mean, the opponent, I mean, Darren Till just showed up and beat my ass, man. He did a good job. Hats off to the poor boy, but yeah, Yancy, I mean, was a fighter. He's a 70-year. I don't know, man. It don't matter to me.
Yeah, I mean, with that, you know, I spoke to you in Edmonton when you were there for a Bud Light activation, and I asked you about Darren, and you know, at the time you hadn't heard of him, and you said you weren't going to watch any tape on him. Even after the camera stopped rolling, you looked at me and said, "I'm not watching any tape on him." Do you have a policy against watching tape of your opponents before a fight? Do you just go in as Cowboy and work that strategy?
Yeah, exactly, man. I don't like to go in there and be like, you know, maybe see him knock somebody out or a big head kick or maybe he has a good guillotine, you know, something where that's going to, like, make me dwell on that, you know what I mean? So I try not to – I mean, I guess I could work the defense. I just don't want to put any extra stress. I mean, it's such a stressful week, such a stressful night, you know. It's like having one more thing that just – it just drives me crazy. So I try to just eliminate that and take it out.
Right now you've lost three in a row. I don't think before this you had even lost two in a row. Does that kind of thing weigh on you at all during your preparation for the fight, or you're just a go-with-the-flow guy and it doesn't matter, it's just another fight?
Yeah, just go with the flow, man. It's just another fight. But, you know, I trained hard for this, taking it serious. You know, it's good, man. I love this sport, bro. I love fighting. I love getting out there and doing what I do. So, no, this is the hardest sport in the world to be excellent at, man. So there's wins and there's losses. I mean, unfortunately, I've taken three L's, you know, and that sucks. But that's not, like, doesn't affect me anyway, you know. So I'm good to go.
I've been watching you since back in the WEC, and it's amazing to me that this is going to be your 27th UFC fight, let alone the WEC. It's pretty incredible. Do you have a favorite fight?
Yeah, with the WEC, I think we're up in like
34, I think. Yeah, something crazy 34. Like that. Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. Do you have a favorite fight? Like, is there a fight where you go back and think that, you know, that fight is really my definitive performance, or a fight that you really enjoy looking back upon?
Man, not really. I can't even tell you. I've watched many of my other fights, to be honest with you.
So that Rick Story highlight, you haven't watched that more than a couple times in your life?
Well, I've seen I haven't seen the Rick Story fight. Does that make it in entirety, right? I've seen that highlight because everyone shows you that, but the actual whole fight, yeah. I can't say I watch. Unless it's a friend of mine or someone, you know, or a fight I really care about, I don't really watch too many fights. I got so much going on in my life, man, that I love doing. It's hard to get after, you know?
Yeah, and you mentioned all the stuff that you're doing pretty much all the time. This is probably going to be an odd question, but how did you become cowboy? I mean, you started bull riding at age 20, but you grew up kind of in a big city in Denver, and you went to school in Colorado Springs. What made you gravitate towards all of the activities that make you live the cowboy lifestyle?
Man, I used to run around with a little cowboy. Like, my name is Cowboy. That's like, it's weird. When I first came into the WC, like, they started calling me Donald. And, like, now everyone calls me Cowboy again. But that's like my name since I've been a kid, right? So, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily mean just because I wear a hat and I ride horses. I mean, I love the lifestyle, but that's just like my name. I just been a wild, you know, a wild kid. My parents just call me Cowboy, man. That was just it.
So it's been something that's been with you since you were a kid, because you kind of didn't follow the rules as a kid and you were an outlaw, so
yeah,
to speak.
Exactly, man. It's like, you know, when someone says, hey, man, there's a bunch of cowboys in here, that's my mentality, man. Just a wild son of a bitch.
You know, I saw recently you made an Instagram post with all of your sponsors, Budweiser, Monster, Harley-Davidson. You know, those are some pretty serious sponsors. Since the Reebok deal, a lot of fighters have complained about how hard it is to get sponsorship. What advice would you give to different fighters that are looking to make more money outside of the cage?
Man, I could not tell you, man. I think I did a good job branding myself young in the sport, you know. And but other than that, it's, like you said, those young guys, that you can't just have one fight in the UFC and think, oh, man, I'm going to sign a huge deal. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't work like that. Just like I can't say, I want to go fight Floyd Mayweather and make $100 million. Well, the opportunity isn't there for me. You know what I mean? It's just, you got to take it when you can get it.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that you also mentioned in that interview with the fighter and the kid is you plan on slowing down a little bit. I mean, you want to fight for 5 more years, but you don't want to take, you know, 4 fights a year, which has pretty much been your average in the UFC. How many times do you hope to fight this year?
4.
So you're off that now?
Who knows, man? If they call me and say I need to fight next week, I will. You know, I love it, bro. I literally love my job, so.
Yeah, I read a really interesting story today. It was about 5 years ago. It was written by Melissa Segura about your upbringing, your grandparents, and how much they meant to you. How much of an influence do you think they were on the leader you've become today? You know, you've opened up your own ranch to aspiring fighters, often letting them stay for free to help them improve their lives. What do you think? You know, do you think that your grandmother, and I know your grandfather's deceased, that they look back on at you and they would be very proud of the man you've become, the leader you've become?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I've always been kind of a leader my whole life, you know, and my dad used to tell me, man, boy, if only you could use your powers for good instead of evil, you'd be such a great guy, you know? Like, when I was a kid, I would always lead people in the wrong, down the rabbit hole, you know what I mean, the wrong way. So it's good to see now that I'm doing positive things and involved in my community and just, like you said, trying to help out and give back.
When did that switch flip for you? Like when did it become apparent to you that you could make a really positive impact in people's lives?
When people would come up to me and say, "Oh my God, man, I try to be like you." I parents bring their kids up, say they look up to me, like, "Oh man, if I have little kids aspiring to be like Cowboy and looking up to me, then I probably shouldn't be. I should probably set a better example," you know.
Yeah, I think you got very lucky with your upbringing with your grandparents. They seem to really let you be yourself, be Cowboy, embrace who you were, take the good with the bad, and just let you find your way. So I think again, reading that story, I really learned a lot about you and the type of person you are, and I think that they're obviously very proud of you.
Right, hell yeah, it's amazing, man. I love it.
All right, Cowboy. Well, best of luck to you this weekend against Yancy Medeiros. You can catch that fight on TSN2 in Canada, and we really appreciate your time.
You got it.
That was Cowboy Cerrone, 3 losses in a row, hoping to bounce back in a big way against Yancy Medeiros. And that's an interesting fight because we saw what Medeiros did against Alex Oliveira. Both guys moved up to 170 pounds, Cerrone and Medeiros, that is. Well, and I guess Oliveira, too, because he used to fight at 155. But this should be a fun one. I think that we could see either a fight that goes 5 rounds or one that ends early.
Yeah. I just think Cerrone's at a time in his career now where does he really want to be world champion? I don't know.
I don't think he ever really did. He was always a guy that just wanted to take fights whenever they were offered.
Yeah, he was there to put good fights. His style of living, you know, isn't that traditional, like, hungry fighter that, you know, like, when I was competing, eat, sleep, work, fight, eat, sleep. He's a little bit more. I like the way he set it up. He has his own ranch, the ranch now, where he brings fighters in. They have saunas. They have hotels. They go hunting. They go gun shooting. They go on the boat and they do their, you know, their little water skiing and their surfboarding and their wakeboarding. Like, and he just has fun around training. And I think that's just a fun way to do it and love your thing. He just, you know, I follow him on Instagram. So he's always on his, you know, motorcycles. He's living it up and enjoying it. So, I mean, good for him. I mean, I still think he could have been a world champion where if he really cut.
He fought for it. He lost to Dos Anjos, but he did get a shot.
But I mean,
and he got shots in the WEC.
Yeah, he took a lot of shots, too.
Yeah, he's taking a lot of shots.
He's taking some shots.
I bet you if you go on Fight Metric, you can see how many
shots
he's absorbed over the years. Significant strikes. It's probably not a very nice number. But Medeiros, again, the kid from Hawaii, that I think has improved a lot as a fighter. He used to train with the Diaz brothers and does bring a little bit of that style to the cage. And I don't really know how to call this one. I think it's just going to be a war, and I think that's why they designed this fight. It's just going to be two guys that have similar striking styles. I kind of lean Cerrone in the fight. I think that Cerrone just has a little bit more tools in the toolbox, and it's a step down in competition for him. I mean, he was fighting top guys, Darren Till, Robbie Lawler. And who was that third loss, the other loss to? At 170, it's whatever. It's
Masvidal.
To Masvidal, right. Masvidal. So we're talking about it's a step down in competition when you talk about a guy named Medeiros who was fighting on the prelims at 218, now headlining an event. So I would lean Cerrone in this fight, but I don't really have a strong gauge on it. I feel like both guys. I feel like it's really going to be Donald Cerrone versus Donald Cerrone. We're going to see what he has left
and how
good he still is, because at his best, he can beat just about anybody. He can sub them. He can stop them with strikes. And I think this is a big step up for Medeiros.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards Medeiros in this. I think Cerrone has a tendency lately, and I think people are starting to expose it. He kicks with his chin really high. And Medeiros is a guy that likes to stay in the pocket and really throw his power punches. So I think the mistake's going to be Cerrone's going to be throwing a kick with his chin up, and he's going to pay for it. I mean, that's the way I see it, and I saw it with his last few knockouts. I think Medeiros has that in his face. I think Cerrone does well with guys who move a little bit more. If a guy's going to hit and move, and you know, it works better for Cerrone, but a guy who stays in the pocket and exchanges really exposes that high chin. So I'm slightly leaning towards Medeiros.
And then you've got Derek Lewis versus Martin Tybura. in the co-main event. Derek Lewis keeps having to drop out of fights, so it's nice to see him back. Hopefully he's able to get to the octagon. He was supposed to fight Fabricio Werdum, but then unfortunately he basically said he couldn't move because he's had all these back issues. Now he's fighting in his backyard close to his home of Houston, Texas, against Tybura, who actually who did he lose to, Tybura? He was in the main event. Was it against Werdum? I think it was against Werdum in Poland.
Yeah, he lost to Werdum.
Yeah, he lost to Werdum in Poland.
Five-round decision. So, yeah, November.
Lewis was supposed to fight Werdum. Tybura ends up fighting Werdum. It's a little bit of a steep climb for Tybura. Ends up losing a decision to Werdum, if I'm not mistaken. And now we'll see this fight, because I think these are two radically different fighters. And personally, I think Tybura is going to win this fight. I think that when you look at him in a three-round situation, he's one of these heavyweights that is really a slow and steady wins-the-race type guy, whereas Lewis needs to get you out in the first or second round. So if Lewis is unable to put Tybura away early, I think Tybura is going to use his technical striking and his distance and his basically his fight IQ to get this one done.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Derek Lewis. I think with his experience fighting the bigger names, him being in his hometown, and the ability to have that power that he has, I'm going Lewis.
I feel like we're on the Fox show, and we're each picking a different guy sake of conversation.
I don't mind it.
And then we've got Vic and Trinaldo. Now, this is an interesting one to me, because I think Vic has looked tremendous lately, and he's really on the up and up, and he's fighting in Texas as well. He's, I believe, from Houston, or from Dallas, actually. He's from Dallas, trains in Dallas, and he's going to be fighting Trinaldo in his backyard. I think, I lean Vic. Like, I think Vic has what it takes to beat Trinaldo, but Trinaldo's just tough as nails. And when I looked at the line for this fight, with Vic being a -230 favorite, I just thought the odds on this were way too long.
I agree with that.
Counting Trinaldo out. So I do lean Vic in this fight. I think that he's got a little bit more than Trinaldo in terms of what he has to offer, more diversity. But Trinaldo is just such a tough out.
I like Trinaldo. I'm picking opposite again. Okay. You have to think of some of the names he's beat still. I mean, Vic's still very young. If you look at the names Trinaldo has beat.
Better resume for sure.
Jim Miller. His one loss, you got to think, his one loss recently was to Kevin Lee.
Yeah, and how many in a row had he won before that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in a row. Yeah. Beating Paul Felder, Yancy Medeiros, Ross Pearson. He beat Chad Laprise.
Good guys, yeah.
He lost to Michael Chiesa back in 2014.
Yeah.
And his only other loss was to Kevin Lee, who is, again, title contender, very high profile. So I got to go Trinaldo. I think he tends to lose to wrestlers, it seems like, from his resume. But I think Trinaldo's too tough, too experienced, too awkward, stiff, powerful. I like Trinaldo as an underdog.
An interesting debut in the next fight, Thiago Alves versus Curtis Millender. Millender has a gigantic reach, and he's a guy that's really improved over the years. He had lost to Michael Page back in Bellator a long time ago, and I think Bellator eventually cut him. He's been fighting in the regional scene at LFA, and he's a really long fighter for welterweight, and I think that could give Alves problems, but I also think it's a massive step up for Millender in terms of the level of competition. Alves hasn't looked great in recent years, but he did get that win over Patrick Cote, showing that he does still have something left in the tank. So this is a tough one for me to call. I lean Millender a little bit just because I think that he can create distance, and if he's continued to grow as a fighter, he should have a little bit more upside than Alves. But Alves is going to be a stiff test for him. This is a fight where I'm having a lot of trouble determining who's going to win.
Well, I don't know enough about Millender, but I know from what I know from Thiago Alves. Hard low kicker, good power. You can't count him out. But what scares me, every time I watch him fight, it scares me.
Alves?
Yeah.
Because he's so reckless?
No, not yet. One, but he had brain surgery.
Yeah.
Where they cut his skull open, took out the top of his head, and did some sort of surgery with...
Really?
He had brain surgery where, like, they literally, if you look, I think he's got, like, a scar on his head where they took his actual skull. They cut his skull.
Jeez.
And so every time I see him get hit, I kind of just like close my eyes. Yeah. And so I get scared every time he gets hit. So I don't enjoy watching it.
You don't want to see brains on TV.
No, I don't enjoy watching it. Like, you can look it up, but I don't know what exactly was wrong with his brain, but he did have his skull cut open. And so every time I see him hit, I cringe. I don't like it.
All right. Well, on to the next topic.
Yeah, next.
Let's bury the lead here. Sage Northcutt against Thibaut Gouthi. We're going to talk to Sage Northcutt in a little bit. Gouthi's coming off his first win. I think he had lost four in a row, but he kept taking short notice fights, and he was in the good graces of the UFC, and they let him continue, and he won his last fight. And then you've got Northcutt, who's also coming off a win.
Yeah, he has three start. Two Canadians beat him.
Oh, Gouthi lost three
Olivier,
in a row.
Olivier and yeah. Chad LaPrise were his last two. Then he ended up beating an Andrew Hallbrook.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
By knockout in the first round. So he's one win, three losses.
Yeah. And then you've got Northcutt, who had a little bit of a skid. And, you know, Northcutt's a young guy. A lot of people write Northcutt off as kind of a marketing gimmick, and they say he gets paid too much, the UFC's invested too much in him. But Northcutt's a fun fighter to watch.
I
actually have no problem with them marketing Sage Northcutt. He's got a fun personality. He's a good-looking kid, obviously, but also a great fighter. It comes from a karate background. He's been doing karate his whole life.
Martial artist.
Yeah, and he's just going to keep growing and growing. He trains with the best of the best, trains with, like, Duke Rufus and...
He's actually with Alpha Male now.
Yeah, and now he's at Alpha Male. Yeah so he's been training with
good guys. Work those wrestlers, man. Good Alpha Male
that's
wrestling.
That's exactly what he needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And he's only going to get better. He came in. There's only so far you're going to get into the UFC with striking.
Yeah.
So what happens, a lot of good strikers get to the UFC before they're wrestling.
Yeah, like
or
Justin Lawrence is a good example of that. He was a finalist on The Ultimate Fighter. Strong karate background. He's actually in Bellator now, but... A lot of people liked him, and he was a big favorite in some of his fights because of what we saw from his karate, and then he just got taken down all the
time.
But
this is where the UFC needs to work with high profile. Like, let's bring up Israel Adesanya. If you give him another wrestler, like, you're not giving him time to develop. Like, I mean, get him to go through camps wrestling, practicing, you know, doing these things, work with them. This way, I mean, you get to the UFC, and you can still learn your grappling as you're in the UFC. We don't have to wait to... 5 years before your wrestling is actually good enough.
They said that he was a blue belt under Andre Galvao, so that means he must have some sort of ground game.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's obviously not
that
great.
He's been doing jiu-jitsu at least 5 years.
Yeah, Mickey Gall choked him out, didn't he?
Who, Adesanya?
No,
I'm talking about Adesanya.
Okay.
I'm talking about Adesanya in terms of Andre Galvao. Yeah, Northcutt needs to work on that. That's why it's good that he's with Alpha Male, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
This is a tough one to call, though, because I think Gouthi's actually a better fighter than advertised, but I would lean Northcutt in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you.
And then, you know, in the prelims, I got to give a shout out to Sarah Morris, Canadian. She's fighting. She looked great back in Edmonton in her last fight. Joby Sanchez, his official return to the UFC. That'll be interesting to watch. And the return of coming off of a suspension, Carlos Diego Fajeja, who's one of my favorite fighters to watch. And Jared Gordon, one of the most incredible stories in MMA, was a heroin addict, homeless, came back from that to become a top-level athlete in the UFC.
Yeah. So, Brian Camozzi's on the card.
Yeah.
My buddy Chris Camozzi's brother.
Yeah.
Brian Camozzi's good. Factory X, Denver guys, my boys.
Yeah, so just should be interesting. I don't know why Josh Berkman's getting another shot in the UFC.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
I think he's lost like 6 of 7. But
I mean, I remember seeing Berkman when I was just a casual UFC
fan.
Yeah,
like a long time
ago. I went
to
an Ohio show. I don't even remember what number UFC was. I took a picture with him years ago. Like, and I don't... usually take pictures with fighters. Like once
you
I got
have
to,
it,
I think so.
You
I should look it up.
Post them on Twitter. This
once
week.
Once I got into like a higher level, I stopped taking pictures with fighters. Yeah. Like my friends started getting mad at me because we went to a UFC when I just started turning pro or something, and they were like, "Oh, there's this guy John Jones. Let's go get a picture with him and an autograph." I'm like, "Buddy, I'm not getting. You think I'm gonna go to another fighter up and coming and get an autograph and picture?" I said, "No way." So they didn't do it. And then they're like, "See, look what we could have had." I was like, "No, still, I stick by my guns.
So
no way."
I was at John Jones' UFC debut in Minnesota. It was on the undercard. It wasn't even televised then.
And you went.
And I was a producer at the time. I was with my radio host. We were watching, and Jones looked good. He won, like, a decision. It was, like, 29-28 across the board. He was still very raw, but he was, like, 21 or something at the time. And we were like, this kid's good. He looks really good. After his fight, like, maybe, like, an hour later, he's just walking around the arena.
Yeah, no one knew.
Shaking hands with people, meeting, like, people that wanted to take pictures with him. He was happy. So I walked up to him and said, "Hey, can I get your number? We'd love to have you on our radio show." And he was like, "Yeah, no problem." I got his number.
Wicked.
And that was his first UFC fight.
Nice.
So, eventually, we were in Montreal, and Jones was at that point, he was established as like a real up and comer. I think it was before he fought Bonner, or after he fought Bonner and beat Bonner. And we had booked him for our radio show, which was on location at a bar in Montreal.
Yeah.
And in my Toyota Prius, I drove to the hotel, picked up John Jones and his future wife, Clay Guida and his manager and stuffed them all in my Prius.
Nice.
So the back seat is like Clay Guida and his manager and John Jones' wife, and John's in the front with me, and we drove like 30 minutes out to Montreal.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah, so that's my John Jones story. And John was like good, just an awesome guy, but so young and like just, you know, up and coming, and it was cool to see.
You didn't give him any party drugs or anything in the car?
No, we did not do anything of that nature.
Come on, Mark.
I've always said there are two types of people in the world. There are people who know how to get drugs and people who don't. And I'm one of those people who don't.
I don't know. I figured John Jones partying. Who knows?
Yeah, but he was young at the time. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
he
even with Adesanya now.
Like, but he wasn't even drinking there, if I recall. I mean, he had maybe one or two drinks. Clay was like three sheets to the wind, though.
Yeah.
It was right before he fought Diego Sanchez. And you remember that fight where him and Diego Sanchez looked like caged animals before
they
fought?
Yeah, they were just going like
nuts. It was one of the best fights ever.
Yeah.
In the interview that we did with Clay Guida, he was talking about Diego Sanchez's wife and all this crazy stuff, like talking crazy
nuts
smack.
Nuts.
And I think that was part of the reason why Diego and him had those looks on their face.
Both of those guys are nuts.
Yeah.
It's so fun
Clay's
to watch.
Clay's still going,
him.
Man. Still getting wins in the UFC.
Even Sanchez, man. Like, I mean, not so great, but like he's just on a different weird atmosphere.
Sanchez,
like,
yeah. Sanchez
universe.
Breathes different
universe.
Oxygen than you and I, that's for sure.
Yeah, that whole yes thing that he was doing at one point.
That Daniel Bryan ended up using in wrestling in the WWE.
See, I like Clay Guida's style, though. It's that hard working, you know,
he's the lunch
carpenter, man. Yeah. Like, you know, you're talking about an Italian guy working on his, like, you know, his craft of carpentry, and then he just nuts energetic. Yeah. I love the story.
Yeah, bring your lunchbox.
Cut your hair though, man. Cut your hair though.
I like
it drives
the hair.
Me nuts.
Like when a metal. He's
always
metal
in his eyes though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a problem. All right. So our picks from last week. My streak ended. I had a loss.
Thankfully.
And you know how I knew that I was gonna lose that fight? Like the moment it started. And the reason I say that is because Josh Matthews is an old WWE commentator. Jake Matthews moved up from lightweight to welterweight. And I thought he was going to be oversized because Yijing Lang is one of the bigger welterweights.
Yeah.
And they were about the same size. And then during the broadcast, Jimmy Smith's like, or John Anik's like, yeah, I spoke to Jake Matthews, and he actually had like a growth spurt while he's in the UFC, because he started at like 21. He's like, and that's why he fights at 170 now. And I was like, yeah, he looks big.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, well, he's gonna take Jing Ling down and have his way with him, and he did.
Yeah, so, I lost on my personal parlay with that one too.
Yeah, so I had Jing Ling.
I'm
and
still
Tuivasa.
Blaming it on you because you picked him. So I was like, Aaron's on the streak.
Yeah.
So you owe me some money, Aaron.
You gotta stop taking it. You're cooling my bets down.
Yeah, there you go.
So then you had Curtis Blaydes, so you won. So right now, I don't have it doubled up anymore, but I'm at 119.40 to 67.75.
Close enough.
We're getting there. And right now, we're recording this on a Monday. The odds aren't out for more than three fights on UFC Austin, so we have a very thin menu.
I like it, though.
But what do you like? What do you got?
There's a lot of underdogs that I like. I'm going to go with Derek Lewis versus Tybura. Derek Lewis is a plus 135. I think he's got it with his experience and his power. Derek Lewis as an underdog.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with Trinaldo. I think Vic is the better fighter at this stage. But I also think that Trinaldo is just a tough out. And when you look at the odds, they're pretty long odds. I just think that when you look at Trinaldo, he has a ton of tools as well.
Yeah, I like that
Vic
pick a lot.
Like
when I
visualize the fight, I consistently see Vic landing knees and beating him, and Vic's gotten so much better as a fighter over time. But I just think the odds are a little too long in this case. That's all it is.
I think what they're giving Vic the odds based on his record. He's 12-1.
Yeah, he's a great fighter.
I mean, very great record, good fighter.
He'll be a lot bigger than Trinaldo in terms of height and stature as well.
Yeah, but I mean, Trinaldo's just that experience. You're talking about 12-1 against 22-5. Like, it's a big experience gap.
I just think there's a good chance that Trinaldo's able to get Vic down and ground him out and like, just take just win three rounds.
On my personal parlays, I'm going to go with Trinaldo for sure this week.
All right. Well, there's our picks for this week. We'll see how we fare next week when you're back from Glory. But before we wrap up, we do want to talk to Sage Northcutt, who's on this UFC Fight Night Austin card, taking on Thibaut Gauthier. We are joined by him right now. I have a feeling I know the answer to this question, Sage, but how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm having fun today and getting ready to start making weight tomorrow.
You know, I didn't think you'd say I'm having a terrible day. I've just never heard that kind of talk from you.
Thank you.
So, like I mentioned, you've been training at Team Alpha Male for this camp. You've been doing karate for most of your life. Was this camp mostly focused on improving your grappling?
Oh, you know what? Not just the grappling and wrestling, but all the transition to my game. So, individually, I guess the wrestling is itself, the jiu-jitsu itself tries itself, but how to mix them in and tie them in together to be the best, I guess, mixed martial artist, well-rounder as I can be.
Have you noticed more of a step up, though, in your wrestling since you've gone to Team Alpha Male? You've got a lot of sparring partners, all of whom have a really good wrestling pedigree. I mean, this is what that camp is known for, is sharpening that and iron, sharpening iron, especially in the lighter weight classes. Have you noticed a bit of a step up in that regard?
Absolutely, sir. And you know what? You have such great training partners, too. So, like you said, everybody there is incredible. You have Cody Garbrandt, who's a fan for the UFC, and he's incredible. And you have Chad Mendez. You got Faber. The list is going on and on with all the great wrestlers.
Yeah, I'm excited for Chad Mendez to come back. That featherweight division's thinning out a little bit, and Mendez is one of the guys that Holloway hasn't faced, so that could be interesting.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
When a lot of people talk about being underpaid in the UFC, your name seems to come up as somebody who makes a pretty good salary early on in their UFC tenure. When you hear that sort of talk, what's your reaction?
Thank you. You know what? I believe the UFC knows what they're watching and looking for, so I always try to go out there and put on a great show for everybody watching and try to go out there and finish my opponent off, so I'm looking to go out there and do something exciting. And I believe a lot of people come out to watch me and see me perform.
So if you had some advice for some of the fighters that do feel like they want to make a little bit more money, what would you tell them?
First off, you appreciate that. You know what? It's not really my point to give advice to any of them. I mean, there's people that have been around for a long time and fighting for the UFC for a long time also. I just try to go out there and perform my best, as obviously I do, and put on a great show. And I believe that the UFC can see the people that come in to watch me and the numbers of people, and they look at that since it is a business.
You recently posted a 5-minute video on your Twitter. It's sponsored by the supplement company that you use. Uriah Faber was in it, talking about how your positive attitude just rubs off on everybody in the gym. When it is fight time and you get into that cage, is there a flip that switches for your fight where you kind of become mean sage? Or do you just approach the same fight with that positivity that carries you through camp and through your life?
Oh, thank you. You know what? I'm always staying positive if I can, always staying upbeat. And always have a ton of energy. So I don't really see there being like a switch when you get out there in the octagon, because for me, it's like there's no switch. It's always on. If you need to go fight right now, 5 minutes from now, you're ready. Or if you need to fight 2 days from now or a year from now, whatever it is, you're prepared. And you always have that competitive, like fighting bit inside you. So I'm a competitor, just like Mr. Faber says, he's a competitor. I'm a competitor. We it's a sport, so that's what we train for.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that positive attitude that you do have, I mean, if you keep that positive attitude all the time, it must be hard for negativity to seep in. It must be, your mind starts to become impenetrable because you're just keeping that positivity. And I imagine that carries with you throughout the fight.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Absolutely. I can agree with that.
One question I did want to ask about Team Alpha Male, is Justin Buckholz still out there training with everybody, or is he moved on from the camp?
Oh, you know what? I'm not sure exactly, because I believe you have to talk to Mr. Faber about that one. All I know is that the class I've been going to and been training with has been the coaches since I got up there. So you have like Danny Castillo, Alex Munoz, Mr. Faber, and there's many more coaches that are there. But that one you have to talk to Mr. Faber about.
And he's going to be in your corner this Sunday. I am talking about Uriah. I have noticed he's done a lot more corner work as of late.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He will be my corner. He actually flies in tomorrow, too, which is really cool.
And you kind of have a bit of a custom corner. It's not just the coaches from Team Alpha Male. It's also, I believe, your dad is in your corner and your longtime boxing coach. Is that correct?
Oh, I do have my dad in my corner. Yes, yes, sir. And then I have my boxing coach actually fly up with me and train with me in Sacramento. So I brought him out for like a month or so, and he's been training with me. So that was great.
How do you like Sacramento? I mean, you're from Houston, lots of tall buildings, big city atmosphere. Is Sacramento different?
Absolutely. And you know what? Houston is super cool, and Katy's super cool, and so is Sacramento. what's neat about Sacramento is you can drive, which I've done with the team several times, is drive like an hour and a half, and you're up in Lake Tahoe, and you're getting to go out to the lake, go up in the mountains, and go off-roading and hiking. So it's definitely a lot of fun.
I mean, I think that the church that you go to in Houston is bigger than Sacramento. That Joel Osteen church. I was in Houston and drove by it, and I couldn't believe how big that church is.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it is pretty big. It's in the compact stadium, so it's just something pretty big.
Absolutely. So finally, on a lighter note, the UFC released a pretty funny video of you where they censored a lot of the words you were saying to make it look like you were uttering lots of profanity. When you first saw that, how did you react?
Oh, you know what? I was like, I kind of looked at it. I was like, what is this? What? Really? And then I listened to it. I was like, oh, that's actually pretty funny. Like, I see what they did. They bleeped up the words. I was like, I never said this.
All right, Sage. Thanks so much. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you.
That was Sage Northcutt. What a nice guy. Good to have him on the show. UFC notebook is up, tsn.ca/UFC, if you want to see the latest news in the world of MMA. You can check out Joe's YouTube page. Username is Joseph Valtellini.
Yep.
What kind of videos can people check out on your site?
Well, I basically take you from a beginner all the way up into a more advanced fighter. So they go by sequence. You can go to episode 1, I teach you how to stand. Episode 2, I teach you how to step. Episode 3, I teach you how to do different things. And right now I'm just finished a 4 or 5 part series on defense. So now we learn how to strike, we learn how to do combinations, kicks, knees, punches, combinations, same side, alternating combinations, so many leg catches, countering. Now we're just working on our defense, and every week I put a new video out. So follow on. Joe Rogan follows and watches all my videos as well, so should you.
Have you? What's the most interesting feedback you've gotten from those videos where someone's reached out
to you? Honestly, every day I get multiple messages of people saying, thank you for the info. You know, like, I can't believe you're giving this stuff for free. There's just so much positivity and people learning. People tag me, and it's just amazing to see someone at home practicing my things, and I see their, like, the little sons practicing with them, or, you know, and it's just really nice to see, because my whole thing is martial arts should be available for everyone. So that father who's working with their kid might not be able to afford or have the time to go and learn martial arts from a gym, so he goes on YouTube, learns, practices, does things on the bag, and there you go, he's becoming a martial artist at home as well. So follow along.
A lot of foul
things.
Language though, right? Not suitable for children.
No foul language.
I'm just
language.
Joking.
Come on. Educational, I swear. Outside
Joe
of martial arts.
Joe was a teacher.
Anywhere outside of martial arts, I'll swear. But when it comes to martial arts, I don't swear. That's my life. That's me.
And if you want to take lessons from Joe, former world kickboxing champion and the voice of glory, you can go to Bazooka Kickboxing at 680 Progress Road in Scarborough. I don't know why we weren't plugging these things earlier.
I know.
It wasn't very kind of me. I should have done that from the get-go. And finally, UFC Fight Night Austin airs at 9 p.m. Eastern on TSN2 this Sunday. So if you got Family Day in Ontario or any other province that has Family Day, I know it's Family Day in BC today, which is this Monday. But if you are in Ontario, you have Family Day the next day, stay up late with us on TSN2 this Sunday. It's Fight Night Austin, headlined by Donald Cerrone and Yancy Medeiros. And that's it.
All right. How did your article do? Last question.
Which one?
You plugged your article.
I don't know. I don't look at the numbers.
No? I was going to say...
I enjoyed writing
it. You talked about, I thought, did you get good feedback from it?
Yeah, very good feedback. Everybody who liked it thought it made a lot of sense. And I've got a column coming out this week on Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman and how he went from the world of hockey to becoming a mixed martial artist. So
nice.
We'll have that later this week as well on tsn.ca/UFC. And Glory.
And Glory, yeah. Weekend. Make sure you come. I'll plug it again. This Friday, we're in Chicago. Glory 50. So it's a big milestone for us. We're excited. We have 2 championship fights, a lot of good North American talent. And I'm pumped, man. I haven't called fights in 2 months. So I'm excited to be back on broadcast with my guy Todd Grisham and Whitney Miller. So we're pumped. We're excited. Got all geared up. I'm packing. I'm leaving tomorrow and a lot of interviews. So check us out. I mean, you'll see a lot of my interviews. We're starting a new sequence when I'm in Chicago where I'm going to get fighters and we're going to watch old fights and we're just going to have, like, you know, conversations. And I want to bring out more of that martial arts side, technical side, and really pull in different things than we're seeing from the fighter. So go on the Glory YouTube channel as well.
Awesome. Check that out. The Super Fight Series is on UFC Fight Pass. Main card on
ESPN3.
On ESPN3 and the Fight Network in Canada.
My dad checked. We got to double check, but my dad was checking today, and it's not playing live for some reason. So I don't know if we lost Fight Network lost the contract or not. I don't know if they're playing them live, but I have to double check. My dad actually just called me before the radio show saying he was panicking because he couldn't watch it. So he's freaking out.
He followed
out.
Me on Twitter this week,
Oh, for sure he does. Yeah, he loves it. My dad's the biggest listener to the show.
All right. Well, hello, Emilio.
There
and
you
goodbye,
go.
Everybody else. That'll wrap up. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.